strawberries in Florida, some of the fruit quality work that we're doing there. So we'll do a quick introduction and then talk about strawberry production, mostly in Central Florida, but then what we're trying to do in South Florida, which is where I am, some of our results and where we're headed next. So my program, I was hired 2 years ago to work on tropical fruits. So a number of people here have the privilege of working on one crop species. I've got a number, as you can see here. All sorts of different foci. So sometimes it's helping growers select the best varieties. Some of these programs are actually breeding programs. And mostly I just get to eat some of the most delicious crops on the planet. I have an 80-20 research split. So I do get to work with growers, and that's exciting, especially for some of our strawberry work. For those of you who aren't familiar with our Research and Education Center system, at the Blue Star, this is where main campus is. It's about 6 hours north, versus our location is down at the tip of Florida. So pretty much anywhere we go is colder and gloomier than our beautiful paradise. Our research center is 160 acres. We have 17 faculty. 7 to 8 of those are brand new, like me, so there's a lot of energy into the system, leveraging what historically has been a very productive research component and extension component to help our growers. To understand our constraints properly, if you look at the largest picture here, we have the Everglades to our west. We have Miami to the north, and then water everywhere else. We have about 15 miles of land, excluding housing, between the ocean and the Everglades. And because of the constraints of, you know, the urban development and the water in the Everglades, our land prices are obviously very high, and our growers need highly profitable crops for their industries. What is our climate like? We do have a wet and a dry season on average. Of course, that's changing and evolving. But we do tend to rely on our winter rains, our summer rains, and our dry season in the winter. Our average temperatures here shown in red, we will do eventually or every so often get freezing temperatures. I haven't experienced one yet, and I'm happy about that. I hope it continues. We could take a little bit of a global warming trend just by us without the sea level rise. Thank you. And then it opens new opportunities for tropical crops in South Florida. We are growing on a crushed limestone rock. If you didn't have respect for plants already, knowing that they can grow in this gravel is absolutely amazing. We have a lot of problems with access to nutrients in that substrate, but the plants do well. We learn how to treat them well, and it helps our growers. Sorry, this microphone is not in the optimal position. I like to walk around, and I'm stuck here looking over here. In Florida, so strawberry, they are a major producer of strawberries, and so mostly focusing in the winter months and in the central part of the state around Tampa. And these are commercial strawberries, the octoploid strawberries that you know and love in the grocery store, large berries, and they have a lot of research support. So they have pathologists, entomologists, they have a strawberry breeder at the Gulf Coast and Research Education Center. So again, they're producing from November to late February when California comes offline. Florida comes on and they produce until it's no longer economically viable to pick and sell. In contrast, in South Florida, we have a lot of ag experience industries. So people in Miami that want to get away from the city will come down to the wild of Homestead, Florida, where we're located, and they want an on-farm experience. So these are U-pick operations. So they'll come down and they'll consume everything in the fields any given weekend. And that's pretty much our market, is attracting these people. They consume everything in the fields, and then they also purchase these value-add products from bakeries, jams, jellies. So that's our industry that we're supporting. But the combination of the ag and the tourism helps them to stay profitable. Now in the lower pictures, so I've got the Fragaria ananassa. This is your commercial strawberry. And then below, this is Fragaria vesca, and that was the major thrust of our research project. So octoploid strawberries are octoploid, 8 copies of their chromosomes. We're focusing on these alpine or diploid strawberries. It's definitely a niche product. They don't ship well. They're very small. They're very aromatic. So they've got some interesting fruit quality aspects to them. Our production system, so these were planted as seeds. So Fragaria vesca is commonly propagated by seeds, unlike clonal propagation of the octoploids. We have 15-inch spacing, and these were grown side by side in our field. They were fertilized through a drip, and there was one application of a snail bait early on in the season so that we would have a yield to measure. For the most part, though, we let the field go in terms of fungicides. We wanted to see what was tough in our growing environment. This was the first time that these plants were grown at this particular spot, though, so we didn't have the typical buildup of inoculum that you would expect in a year-over-year production system. So what did we see? Which you can barely see, but the presentation is going to be available after the conference. We measured fruit yield and then the number of plants, and shown here are the 16 accessions, the diploid accessions that we grew. And our big question was, if a grower was to adopt this variety, this species, what would they want to pick first? So again, when people descend, yield is your number one contributor to profitability. And we found significant differences. One of our top producers was Baron Solomacher, that produced early and had a high yield throughout the season, versus some others that you naturally wouldn't pick because they were somewhere around a fifth or a tenth in terms of the yield production. In terms of the number of fruit, we found an extremely high correlation between the number of fruit and the total biomass that was produced by the plants, and so we'll no longer count the fruit. Average fruit size is just over 1 gram for these berries versus your commercial octoploid, 25, 30 grams per fruit. We looked at Brix and acidity and didn't see a lot of differences between the different accessions. So while you could argue that there's a statistically significant difference, I wouldn't argue that this is significant at the consumer level, at the sensory level. And this was surprising to us. What it suggests is that we didn't capture a lot of diversity in the accessions that we picked, but we're also limited by what's already out there available on the market. The different bars here represent different time points, and so while we were measuring yield twice a week every week for a couple of months, we harvested three times week after week late in the season to look at fruit quality. Aroma is one of my passions. It was a topic of my PhD, and we looked at each of the individual accessions, looking at the total aroma, and here are the three different harvests. And what you would expect over the season is we see some major differences in the just abundance of aroma compounds being produced. Whether any of those are, you know, really significant across the varieties, we didn't see evidence that would, a lot of presence or absence of aroma volatiles, which would have been nice in terms of looking at genetics and breeding. Shown here on the lower right is methylanthranolate. It's a key aroma volatile in diploid strawberries. It's present to a minor extent in the octoploid strawberries, though we are working, or there, I know there are groups working on introgressing this specific aroma compound into the octoploids from the few accessions where it does currently exist. We found that Baron Solomacher, again, it was a higher yielding accession, and it also produced this aroma compound a little more consistently over time. We did 2 years of yield trials on commercial octoploid accessions. I called my former advisor and still friend, Vance Whitaker, the strawberry breeder, and said, give me what's new, and we're going to try it to what the growers are already producing. So in South Florida, how do you pick which strawberry cultivar to grow? It's easy. You grew what you grew last year. And that goes back till Strawberry Festival is the major accession people are growing now. And I say, well, what else have you tried? Oh, we tried Radiance, but we didn't like it. And so we tried a few different accessions here. We took what they were growing, Festival, and our question was, can we just give something that's currently existing to the grower that requires fewer inputs and that will also give them more yield? Again, when these people from Miami descend on Homestead, they eat everything. So if you can produce 20% more, you've just made 20% more in terms of your profits. And over these 2 years, this is just 1 year's data shown over time with weeks here, and the accessions are the different colors of the bars. This was a replicated field plot design, just like for the Fragaria vesca. And what we see is that Sensation, for both years, outperformed Festival. with one caveat. So this is marketable yield. What we saw was that Strawberry Festival was producing the same amount of biomass in terms of fruit versus Sensation, but because of anthracnose, the marketable yield specifically for Sensation was higher. And this is, again, we weren't applying fungicides or insecticides. We just let these plants go. And so for the grower, we have some data that suggests if they were to switch now to Sensation, they could increase their yields at specific time points over 20%, especially late in the season. Where Central Florida will go offline for their strawberries because California produces, we don't do the same thing in South Florida. We just produce as long as we can because people will continue to come and buy strawberries as long as you can produce them. So the late season yield is especially valuable for our growers. Where do we go from there? So the nice thing that we found out for strawberries, this is my first field day as my extension component, so that was fun. The thing that made it really nice is I was expecting four people, the four strawberry growers that I've been working with that whole year, and none of them came, but 34 other people did come. A lot of people we didn't know. So we've got a lot of tropical fruit growers that have trees, right? So these groves, these orchards, and this was it's a new clientele. Down there. So we have a lot of interesting growers. We have growers that were lawyers. We have PhD lawyers. We have one grower that has a PhD in philosophy that used to teach. These people get sick of the life they're living. They come down to Homestead. They get 5 acres and they want to grow stuff. And we start talking about some of these crops where you can get a quick return versus a mango or an avocado, especially avocado now. Strawberry is a great option for them. So we start talking about the octoploids, the diploids, niche specialty crops where you won't have the competition for overseas, especially the diploids, because you can't ship these things. So this is a truly local market specialty product, and looking at this as a quick return on investment with minimal inputs at this point. So I've got a number of good people working with me, including our collaborators that helped us out with the fruit quality work. And with that, I actually have time for questions. Thank you. So the question is Sensation versus Survival. Sensation does need a little bit of babying in terms of establishment, right? That's noted in an EDIS publication that helps the growers now how to establish. Our establishment procedures are very different than what they do up north. Up north, which is funny because it's still several thousand, 100 miles below here. So when they establish their plants in Florida City, they have to get going as soon as possible, so they use a lot of water for their plant maintenance. I told our field crew about that, and they said, "You're crazy. We're not going to do that." And so for our establishment, it was 2 hours of overhead watering every day for 5 days. That was enough to keep these plants healthy. Whether more would help them be productive sooner, but with just that minimal input, we didn't see mortality rates, significant differences for mortality rates. Versus something like a Radiant, it really didn't do well in our soils. So no matter what you do, it just wasn't a good producer. So the question is, what do we do to amend our soils to help with this pH issue? For this, nothing. And so through the drip, we added just NPK and let the plants go. Again, so this is the very first part of the project, and I wanted to get rid of some of the weaklings. And now we know some of the superior types, we can do some more detailed studies on what can we really do now that we know what's going to produce best under this system.
So what terminates the crop at the end? Is it peat, and then
what is the season extending? So what stops the harvest is glyphosate for the most part. So heat, the diploids especially don't handle the heat well. And so going from February into March, you see a very rapid decline. The octoploids seem to be a little more plastic in terms of what they can handle. But the diploids, this is a temperate crop growing in a subtropical environment. And so first you just see the flowers, they stop. It turns into vegetative-only production. You just get these big bushes. So I'm going to have to stop there.